You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. An afternoon drive home like no other.
It was $200, but it came with a shirt, a tie, pants, socks, and shoes.
You want to know? This is, I feel like Tommy Boy. Remember Tommy Boy where he's like, it's a clip-on. Right. He's like, yeah, you think? My little...
The puff?
The puff. Yeah.
It's part of the jacket.
It's built into the jacket.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
All right, Nick Nurse will join us at 5:30. Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, coming up here in a moment. Second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs beginning tonight. Jays are off today, but Vladdy Guerrero Jr. will be in the house. He's going to be unveiled to the media tomorrow, and then he's playing tomorrow night. They're going to open the gates at 4:30 so people can get down there early, watch batting practice. I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like. It would be great if the roof was open tomorrow night.
Wow.
I doubt it, but we'll see. And Vladdy, we've been waiting for it for a long time, but he's here.
I for some reason, I've got this spidey sense that he's going to like crack a couple dingers.
I think and he is a man that understands the moment.
Yeah, and the city's going to rally behind it.
Overreact.
Well, overreact isn't the right word when you've got somebody who the trajectory looks like the guy's going to be a star. So it's I don't know if overreacts the right.
I guess you're
shouldn't
right.
Shouldn't he be ready for a steady diet of diving down in the dirt balls? I don't think he. What pitcher wants to be just?
Well, that's a good question. Like,
what pitcher wants to be the guy for his first dinger?
Right. Like,
or who, just all overall in general, it's like who wants to be posterized by this kid?
And you talk about pitching around a portion of the order.
Right,
he comes up and he's immediately the most potent bat they have.
Yeah, so it's like, am I going to try my best, see if he can beat my best, and if he does, I look like an idiot, or am I going to just throw him?
Yeah, I'll take Justin Smoke.
What if you clank him? What if you?
Well, why would you do that?
Like, just straighten you out, kid. I don't know. I would never do that.
Listen, 20, 30 years ago, if a kid came up and he was too cocky, like Bryce Harper when he first came up was so cocky and so arrogant, and there was so much hype. He got hit.
Yeah, that's
like
what
if Vladdy's playing with flair, and if he bat flips or he takes his time around the bases, yeah, he'll get hit. That wouldn't surprise me. Now, how his teammates react to it, I don't know. But
well, he can move for a big guy.
I wouldn't fight him.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, but I'm not a fighter. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody gives him a little chin music.
Maybe.
I don't want to see it.
Baseball players are big dudes, man. The times that I've been down in the field, that was the one thing I found surprising. I always thought, like, hockey players are big. And then I got, like, they are big human beings.
A lot of them work out a lot. And to have the, you know, the forearm strength and the back strength.
But just in general, like, they're big dudes.
Yeah, there's some monsters.
Well, you see, the NHL's gone the other way. You go and stand near an NHL dressing room, everyone is so skinny and lean now
because
it's a speed game. Like... Even some of my buddies are still in the game. They're all like skinny. They look malnutrition. They're not because they're in such great shape, but they're just not carrying any weight. They're not carrying anything because it's a speed game.
That's the NHL. That's the NBA. The NBA is in the same way. Like remember LeBron had that.
He was 30
transformation
plus. Although he's gone back to it, did he not?
He did. He put on a lot of weight. Allegedly this year, but over the course of a summer, I remember he shaved off like 30 pounds or something.
Yeah.
But in baseball, they're like you look at Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. Judge, I think, is 6'9", and Stanton's 6'6".
They're huge.
They're monsters.
And they're put together. Like, they're jacked. Yeah, they're not skinny guys.
No, but you're right, in the NHL. Like, I noticed it, I was watching Alex Pietrangelo do a postgame.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how skinny he looked. Like, he looked unhealthy almost.
But that's what I say, like malnutrition.
He looked like a marathon runner. Like, that's what he looked like, someone that has 1% body fat.
And I generally don't consider him one of those ultra-lean guys. Like, he's a pretty big dude himself.
Yeah, he seems like he's a thick guy. There are some thick guys just naturally in the National Hockey League, but it is a lot different. That's what makes it a little bit of an outlier. Like that Josh Anderson in Columbus, like he walked in. I was calling a game. He walked in right beside me. He's big and he's jacked. He looks more like Judge and Stanton than you know, the other guys. Like Brad Marchand, we forget Brad Marchand is this big.
He's so tiny.
He's tiny.
He's so short.
He did a walk-off the other day.
He is.
With
he's
no
so
gear.
Short.
With no gear when they won game 6.
5'8".
I'm not sure he's 5'8".
Yeah, he's in that
I think he might be listed at 5'8 or 5'9". I'm not sure he's 5'8".
But he'd gone and changed and came back and did an interview. And the interviewer, who I know is on the other company, is not a big guy, was towering over top of him. Towering. I remember thinking, wow, I forgot how small Brad Marchand is.
Well, you know what Marcus Stroman would say about that.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
Height doesn't measure heart.
Wow.
Brad Marchand is in the same boat
as Stroman. Well, he plays hard.
Good one,
yeah.
Andy. Good one.
You're right.
Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. What's up, Ray?
What do you guys got against short people?
We were talking about how baseball players, it was Vladdy, and Vladdy's going to debut on Friday. You know, he's a big guy, and a lot of baseball players are big guys, like actually physically big and strong, and I think the NHL has trended. Ray, you're around the guys a lot. Everyone is so lean and skinny.
They look so different than they did just a few years ago. It's funny, when I was watching, when I've watched Guerrero swing, the guy I think of, now they're not the same, but is Prince Fielder. And like just big, thick, super quick guys. And like I can't even believe they can move the way they can move because of the size they are. And in the NHL, it was always about strength and power and size. And now all of a sudden you got a bunch of guys that are, you know, my size and way less than me that are zipping around on the ice, and it doesn't matter anymore. Like, you still got to be strong, but there's a whole open category that wasn't there just a few years ago.
Totally different world now, where look at the Hughes brothers. Yeah. Jack's going to go first overall. Quinn Hughes looks like he's 14 years old.
Do you remember when Patrick
Kane doesn't matter.
When Patrick Kane came into the league, we all thought that paper boy's not going to last.
And he dominated from game one.
But he seemed like a little bit of an outlier back then based on the body types. And now he is the norm. And like you say, the Hughes brothers are going to be the norm. Mitch Marner's the norm. Mitch Marner's actually bigger than I thought he was, personally.
He's a little bit taller than you think he would.
Hey, guys, what about this kid at the U.S. national program, Cole Caulfield? He's like 5'7". Yeah. He's like Alex DeBrincat. He's got 70 goals this year.
Well, that Rocco Grimaldi.
I was just going to say, Rocco Grimaldi. Giant. Like, that guy is 5'7", I think.
No, he's not. Not a chance.
Grimaldi?
That's on the best day of his life. He's 5'7".
Is he 5'6"?
Yeah, I saw Brian Boyle and him celebrate a goal. It was like Boyle had brought his little brother to the game.
I'll never forget in Hartford, Pat Verbeek. I didn't know him. I didn't meet him. And he came on the ice, he had a cage on because he had a face injury. And I asked one of the guys, I'm like, who's that? And they're like, it's Pat Verbeek. I thought it was somebody's kid. He was just this little guy.
Yeah.
And he was such a pain in the ass. It was unreal how short he was.
500 goals. What was 3,000 penalty minutes.
What was his nickname?
A little ball of hate.
I thought it was, I don't know if it Pig Farmer.
Oh, Pig Farmer. He was a pig farmer.
That's what I remember, like somebody yelling from the bench, calling him a pig farmer, and I don't know if that was.
I would know if he ever gave me 2 minutes to talk to him. He wanted no part of my action, so
he didn't like you?
No, he wouldn't even talk to me.
Like in general, or just
like in general, I think he had a thing where if you didn't play 3 or 4 years, he would not acknowledge me. He didn't. I didn't ever even said hi.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
Down. He had you pegged early. Huh?
Yeah, he figured you out early. That was me, Ray, when we played. I loved Vladdy Malakhov, but he barely said two words to me for 2 years or 3 years that I was there with him.
And he spoke English. I roomed with him. And so in the first part of his first year, I started calling him Big Dummy. I'd say, hey, Big Dummy, let's go. Time for go to the rink. Hey, Big Dummy, turn the TV off. So one day in January or so, he grabbed me like by my shirt. He goes, hey, I know what Big Dummy is. I'm no Big Dummy. I thought he was going to kill me. I was like, oh, he was bloody after that. after that.
Yeah, that's okay. Awesome. What's your real name? That's what we're going to be calling
that's
you.
That's awesome. You have a nickname for a guy, Big Dummy.
You tell me, smile and come along, and I'm like, nah, he still doesn't know. So man. That's okay.
Was he ever a good player? He was such a good player.
Well, today it was... I mean, it's a weird vibe in Toronto because I don't think Carolina winning last night helped anything.
No, it rattled people, if anything.
Yeah, Carolina wins, not like all four wild card team wins, and you lose again to Boston in seven. Like they should have done their locker clean out yesterday. Get it out of the way so that you don't.
What
have
do you
to
think happens
it.
Next year? Do you think there's a bunch more trades at the deadline, or you think teams are like, screw it, let's try to get in as the wild card?
I was trying to figure that out myself because I think it could go both ways. I think teams that are 2 or 3 points out, or even 5 out, are going to say,
might
"I'm
go
not making a line,"
or they might go Kekalainen and say, "Let's get everybody."
Wow. Yeah, you're right.
Here's the problem, though, is you need somebody to buy from.
Yeah.
If more teams think that they're in it because they're 4 or 5 points out, they might say, you know what, we can make it up, so we're not going to sell anybody. And there might not be anybody in the market. But this is a pretty good example with the way that the league is shaken out over the last 15 years is that it really does now feel like if you can get in, then you can beat the top seed. We just saw it. And you know that everybody's going to be selling that to their fan base, they're going to be selling it to their owner. Hey, we just need a couple more changes. We spend just a little more money, we can be Carolina or we can be Columbus. When was the last time a team said that?
Well, here's the reverse, though. The owner goes to the GM and goes, did you see what Carolina pays? They're through to the second round. So actually, I'm going to slash payroll because you got to find a way to make this work.
Yeah, their
Carolina
makes,
did.
Coach makes $300,000 in Carolina, and what, you want $5 million?
Right. Yeah. Not going to happen. Actually, Carolina. I'm glad you brought up Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
Because look what they just paid their whole group, and they're into the second round. So I would watch what you wish for if you're a GM.
Yeah, but here's the, don't you think, guys, like, so often there's a generalization. Like, you know, okay, Carolina's got a low payroll, I think one of the lowest in the league. And why can't we do that? Well, they've got a superstar in Sebastian Aho who's on his entry-level contract. Next year, he's going to be making $8 or $9 million. So, like, it's hard to say, like, okay, yeah, I can have a low payroll, but I don't have him.
Right.
I don't have their defense. And so, of course, the owner might say, well, then go find it. Why aren't you finding it? Why don't you have it?
Ray, speaking of the contracts and Aho, you know, the Mitch Marner subject came up today, and Kyle Dubas came out and said this is number one priority. How do you think this all shakes out? And obviously they want to get this done before July 1st. Do you think how do you think this is going to play out, but how is it going to affect all the other RFAs that are looking for big-time money? Because they're going to go to their organizations and say, well, if Mitch Marner's at this, why do I deserve half?
Well, it's... I'd say there's very few contracts that help set the market, but Marner's is going to be one of them. And if I'm another restricted free agent, I'm waiting till he signs because I don't have any worry that he's going to sign a deal that's going to hurt me. Like there's none. There's no deal Mitch Marner could sign if I'm Sebastian Aho or Mikko Rantanen or any other of the 7 or 8 or 10 really top end restricted free agents. There's nothing Marner could sign that would hurt me because he's getting a big number. And so I'm with you. Like, I just sit there and wait. If I'm Toronto, and Dubas was pretty upfront today to say this is priority one, they don't want to take a risk. What if somebody gets to July 1st and says, yeah, I know this is crazy, but I'm going to try and offer sheet him. Like, what if? If you can get the deal done, if the parameters are sort of in place that you can get it done, then, hell, I'd want it done tomorrow if I could.
Well, ideally, yeah. Get it done yesterday if you can, but...
Well, what are the parameters? That's
the thing. And now, you know the way agents are going to feel this type of commentary. If I'm his agent, unless you're concerned about, you know, soiling a reputation, soiling a relationship, or if Mitch Marner goes to his agent and says, hey, stop messing around here. Let's get it done. This is where I want to be. But you have to hope that happens if you're a Maple Leaf fan. But I wouldn't
imagine he wants to be anywhere else.
I don't think he does, and he said that today. I think he's being genuine. I think he loves being a Maple Leaf. He's from Toronto. He grew up a diehard fan.
Right.
But I think the instincts of an agent, of a lawyer, would say, my phone is off until June 30th. I'm not even answering your call. And you can call me on June 30th, and I'm going to say 8 years, $13 million. And if not, I'm listening to other teams tomorrow. Like, why wouldn't you play that leverage game? As much as Leaf fans don't want to hear it, the agent's probably like, okay, if you really got, if you're telling me this is your priority and you got to get this done before you work on Kapanen and Janssen and trades and everything, we're working on my timeline here.
I can't believe for a second that they haven't talked all season long. I don't believe that for a second. Right. I can't believe that Marner's agent and Kyle Dubas haven't had a conversation about what kind of parameters they're looking for. 1 week before that draft, or before the June or July 1st free agent day, you better believe that things are going to be flying like crazy, right? And he's got to know, the agent's got to know, by that time, he's got to know by the first or the last week in June whether there's an offer going to come or not. And if there isn't, that changes his whole dynamic. But if I'm the Leafs, of course I want to get this done. I want it done as fast as I can.
Well, Patrick Marleau was talking today, and he didn't give any indication that he's going anywhere or he's retiring.
Getting new skates and a new one-piece stick next year.
Very important stuff. And he said he's going to change his off-season preparation, which I don't think is the concern. Here's what I think has to happen with Marleau, because you have to show him respect.
Right.
He deserves respect.
He gave signed him, the contract.
They offered him the three-year deal. He signed it. So if he wants to come back, he has the right to come back. There's nothing they can do about it. But he has to be treated like a pro, and I would go to him and say, that's fine, but we're not playing you every night. Like, I looked up his numbers, and I kind of get the impression he's 67 games away from passing Jaromír Jágr for third all-time.
Right.
I think he probably has 76 games in mind for next year. He's not catching Messier, who's two, and clearly he's not catching Gordie Howe. But I think if he's going to be here, okay, you're here. But I think you got to go to him and say, you're not playing every night. Load management, it's changing. The Ironman streak isn't going to change.
But here's my concern about that. You're going to have to, because of that situation, you may have to throw somebody else overboard.
Absolutely.
To keep that contract. So I think there's got to be open communication between Kyle and him and say, like, this is what we're trying to do. We've got contracts to sign. They've got to clear some cap space. And it may come in the form of, you know, Zaitsev if you package it up. I know people are pissed off at Kadri. Well, Kadri's a movable contract on a real nice term. I'd be careful with that one. I'd keep him personally. But what are you going to have to pay some of these guys?
And bottom line is, you got to make a tough decision. He's 39 years old, and the performance does not match the money. So figure it out. If you want to play Mr. Nice Guy and say, oh, we still want you back, but you can't just keep lying to yourself and throwing him out there saying this is good for anybody. He's a good leader. He helps our young. That's great and everything. You make a bunch of money, Brian, not for tutoring me and Jamie on this show.
No, you're paid to perform.
Well.
Actually,
not that much.
No.
Anyway, go ahead, Ray.
So I think, I thought they botched this year. They should have had a clear indication of what a refreshed Marleau looks like when he came back from the All-Star break. And then when they went down the end of the road, he's playing every night, he wants to keep the streak. Good. I'm paying you $6 million. You want to keep the streak? I'm sorry, but your performance can't keep you in the lineup. We need you to be better in the playoffs. So we think, and our sports science department probably thinks, that you need to be more rested. This streak is... If the streak is more important than everything else, then they're in this for the wrong reason. It's unfortunate, and I played in Hartford when Doug Jarvis's all-time leading streak ended on a healthy scratch. It's the way it goes.
Yeah, you can't do the old Lou Brown and grab the contract and throw it on the baseball field.
No, but you treat him like a pro, and if he's not good enough to go. And ultimately, it's going to be about the playoffs next year. Like, that's what it's going to be about. And if Marleau... Sorry, man, if we got to shut you down for the final 2 weeks and you're not going to pass Jágr, you're not passing him. Like, that's, you're here,
Brian,
to win.
Say they got 15 or 16 back-to-backs next year. Oh, there's 15 or 16 he's not playing.
Right.
Like, that's you have to manage it in a way that you to realize you have a 40-year-old player. It's different. Char is different because he's an ox, right? Like he cannot move anywhere and still be effective. Marlowe's a forward. He has to play differently. That's very clear. And so that's a decision that they're going to have to make. The stuff that stood out for me was, you know, Kyle Dubas saying that he was responsible for everything except the bad food.
Right.
He took responsibility for stuff that he didn't need to take responsibility for. I commend him for it. I think it's really good leadership to take it all on. But I found it quite striking that Babcock, who always talks about accountability and, oh, you know, the good thing about the game is that you get to make it right. You get to do things better. He took no accountability for anything. Hey, your penalty killing stinks. You didn't have a centerman on there. Push for a centerman that can take a face-off in your penalty kill. Like, I just found the difference in the two sets of comments, guys, I found that to be quite striking. I really did.
Yeah, they were extreme. You're right. We pointed that out in the previous hour. It was commendable by Dubas. It wasn't credible. You know, he's taking credit for, or he's the one taking responsibility for William Nylander not performing. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Or the penalty kill not being good enough? He was trying too hard to take on all the bullets. I understand why he was doing it. But I'm not surprised with Babcock. Babcock hasn't taken responsibility for anything in 20 years. I didn't expect him to start today,
right.
But you're right. I mean, it's we got to get better players. We got which every coach is going to say and every coach is going to think.
But
I want to play the Dubas clip on Babcock. Okay, let me get to this quickly here. We'll get your take on it, right? Because Dubas was asked specifically, is Babcock going to be the coach next season? Here's what he said.
When we talked to him, his temperance is a major point. He's an excellent player for us and brings an element that we don't have in abundance, and that, yes, he likes to defend his teammates and he plays very hard and everything of that nature, but we need him to be available. And, you know, as you see, the suspension goes from 3 games this year, no, last year to 5 games, and I don't think if he continues with that sort of behavior, the suspensions are not going to decrease. And he needs to find that balance between playing extremely hard and defending his teammates and being available to the group, and I don't think anybody feels worse about it than he does.
All right, clearly the wrong clip. That's Nazem Kadri. Do we have the clip on Babcock or what? Okay, let's hear what Babcock,
all
what
good.
Dubas was saying.
We'll regroup here.
About Mike Babcock.
I think for the way that I look at that, Bruce, is that, you know, Shanny has to decide on me first and do an evaluation of me, which I think any organization would be best to do. And then once that's done, we evaluate everybody. And we could win the Stanley Cup and it would be the same discussion of evaluating where we're at and are we content and are we moving in the right direction. So I think with how fluid the situation is, I wouldn't give any guarantee to anybody in our whole organization, starting with me. And we'll do what we think is best and we'll let you know when we know, but that's my expectation.
It's funny, there would be no guarantee given to anybody, but doesn't William Nylander kind of have one?
Well, yeah. He said he did.
Never going to be traded.
So I think there's when he says things are pretty fluid, I think the learning curve's pretty fluid too.
Right. Well, and there's another one where I think Dubas feels pretty confident that he's still going to be the GM of the team.
Yes.
Like, he's going to be evaluated. Okay. But what
it's
sticks
not a
out,
ringing endorsement.
No. Listen. This organization knows the way the city works, knows the way the media works. Right. They've had 48 hours to prepare for one question. They knew it was coming. Is Mike Babcock the coach next year? The fact that
would have been easy to say yes.
Exactly. Like, I still think he's going to be the coach, but the doors open a little bit based on that. Because you can't say, well, it's up to Brendan Shanahan. Well, then get Shanahan down there to speak. Like, who's making that call? You've had 48 hours to figure this out, and your answer is,
everyone's
I can't
under,
give you the answer if he's 100%
well,
back.
He gave the can't confirm or deny. That's really, you know, what it was.
I can neither confirm or deny that.
What do you make of it, right?
I mean,
I thought when that clip was going that it just left open too many little side doors for questions to pop in and people to evaluate his comments, Kyle's comments, in many different ways. And I've always viewed him as really careful about and really thoughtful about what he says before he says it. And so the two things that stand out for me is that he wasn't able to say, yes, Mike's a coach, of course he is, and that he made that comment about Nylander earlier in the year. I think they're kind of bogeys because they open up extra lanes of questioning. You're never going to get it all right, but yeah. there's a feeling of unease around the Leafs that, I don't know, it's not going to go away anytime soon, that's for sure.
Ray, the other day Blake Wheeler had an endorsement for their coach. I don't think that anybody for the Leafs would do that, but do you think they would have an exit meeting or and comment on their views or thoughts of the coach? Because in our meetings that we had, I don't think that was really our place. We thought that was none of our business, but it's different nowadays.
Well, I think there would be players that the manager would talk to. What do you think? You know, what are your thoughts on how, you know, if you're on the power play, how are the power play this year? Because the power play wasn't any good this year either. For the way it started in October, man, it was amazing. And so, you know, the penalty killing was what it was too. Would you not ask the players that are in there, do you think you're prepared? What do you think? What could change? Doesn't mean you have to do anything about it, but you gather a little information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever recall being asked what I thought about the coach.
Neither have I.
There was a couple of times I would have liked to have volunteered some information, but that didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, we get a long off season here.
We got lots to talk about in the off season.
Well, they opened up lots for us here. So, but I will say that my main takeaway today was just I was a little disappointed that Babcock put up the deflector shield for somebody that talks about accountability as much as he does. I was disappointed with that. I thought that could have been a far different sounding press conference.
Yeah. Well, they asked him flat out, could you have done anything different? And he's like, well, you look at it, and everybody could do. Like he never. I don't know. I guess that's just the way he is. He does everything properly, well, and everything else is everyone else's fault.
The thing is if he says yes, then you ask what, and then he goes, well, I could have done this, could have done. I mean, now you open you open a can of
worms. Well, in that case, he's probably smart for answering
right.
like yeah. that.
He knows what he's doing. I mean, he's been doing these for a long time.
No, but okay, so let me finish my point then, if that's what you, like, so could you have done anything different? Yeah, you know what, maybe we could have made an adjustment on the power play. Maybe we were a little late to that. What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
You lost. Like, so you're going to do everything right? Or you did everything right and you lost? No, of course not. So I don't think people... I think people have more of an issue with this as opposed to, yeah, we could have, you know, changed the breakout on the power play or changed something on the power play and clearly we didn't have the answer on the penalty kill and that's something we're going to have to look at. What's wrong with that? Nothing.
No. Well... we'll see, buddy. Yeah. I guess we're doing this again on Monday, right?
Yeah, something like that. I got to hit balls right now, so I'm busy.
Okay. Well, have fun with that.
You gonna watch? You gonna watch Vladdy tomorrow?
Absolutely. Can't wait. Guaranteed home run night.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Did you see the picture that was out? Him and his dad swinging side by side at the Olympic Stadium.
Unreal.
Oh my God, it's amazing. It's the same swing.
Two monsters. One of them's a Hall of Famer. The other one. Calling my shot, Hall of Famer before he even makes it to the majors. Just putting a little bit of pressure on him.
Had to jump in early there, Hayes. You're just like the guy out here in Vancouver that asked me on the radio before Quinn Hughes played a game if I thought he could win a Norris Trophy.
Yep, that sounds about right. Put the cart way before the horse. That's how we roll.
Have a good weekend, boys.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are back. Purchase any new vehicle and get a $500 gift certificate to Appliance Canada, plus get rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com. Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors, next.
Guys in the back, you got the Nick Nurse on, or you got the Toronto Rock head coach on? You got it? It's all good, or
we're
what?
We're working out the kinks. Yeah. I probably could have handled that a little bit better.
Why did we should probably, like, now that we're on TV full time, can we go back to the tape? Can we actually review the tape of the? Did you have the?
You
Nick
did
Nurse?
Nick Nurse face.
I had a Nick Nurse face. That's right. That was three in the key. Nick Nurse face.
But they
Let's
did
play
that
the
on
coach
purpose.
Clips and Nazem Kadri clip came on. You were so mad.
Well, yeah. I
Let's
anyway,
bring him on.
It doesn't matter. Here's the man himself.
Exactly.
The head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse. What's up, Nick?
Hey guys, how you doing? What are you guys talking about?
we're talking about you and your famous gift that's out there, the Nick Nurse face.
Oh,
I wanted to ask you, Like, if you go home and you don't like dinner or something, or dinner's late, like, do you do the Nick Nurse face, or is that just for the court?
That's only for the court. Wow. And only, hopefully, only that time on court is the last time you're going to see that, hopefully.
So what was it, like, was it because of the actual infraction, like three?
I thought it was a great play that Nick Nurse face came out.
I thought it was outstanding, too. I mean, Fred gets called for three in the key. You rarely see that called. You know, was that why you had that type of reaction or what?
Yeah, that's what it was. You don't see it very often in general, right? And then you really don't see it when a guy dribbles in there and he's kind of still dribbling hardly ever, I guess. I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy dribbling in there and keep his dribble. And I don't know. And plus, it was a really fast three. So that's, I guess, I'll add all that up and that's what happened. I must have really wanted to win that game. I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
So now you gear up for Philly. You've had a couple of days off, and you got a couple of more. You don't play until Saturday. How can this type of gap in the schedule help you guys?
Well, I think we've got a veteran team. You know, we got quite a few in our top eight. We've got five or six older guys. So I think any more days you can get to recover is always a bonus. That's the first thing. I think we put a lot of effort out in that first series too. We were playing hard from game two on, and so any more recuperation time we can have, I think, helps us. And then prep time, you get to shift gears pretty quickly. You got a new team in that we haven't really played because of all the changes they've made and we've made. So it's kind of almost a fresh start playing against this team. So just use all that time to prepare as best you can,
Well, you mentioned that eight-man rotation, which you were pretty firm with, and unless there were blowout games, you'd go 9, 10, 11 deep. But for the most part, pretty much wrapped up with Norman Powell coming off the bench, and he was averaging, I think, 23, 24 in the first round. Do you intend on sticking with more or less an eight-man rotation, or could it become even thinner than that if you have to?
Yeah, no, I think Fred, Serge, and Norm will definitely be a factor in the series. Where we go from there, if we go to a ninth or not, I guess at this point, I wouldn't say that we will or not, or we may try Patrick McCall. We use Jody Meeks just for a few minutes a game at the end of the first and start of the second quarters. But you never know. It's a totally different team. They're a little bit bigger. I may have to use those eight guys a little differently, but I'm pretty much just concentrating on us, and I like the feel of those eight guys, and see if we can't figure out how to cover them with those guys,
With Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors, Raps 76ers starting Saturday down at Scotiabank. You talk about size. Joel Embiid is one of the bigger guys in the league and more effective bigs we've seen in quite some time. Yet Marc Gasol would be in that same category, and Gasol obviously was incredibly effective in the first round. How challenging will this matchup be for Gasol?
Well, Embiid's big, right? But he's also really skilled. He's a guy that can shoot the three. He's got an array of post moves. He can also take it off the dribble a little bit, and he could really offensive rebound. So, I mean, the challenge, I think, is this. I think Marc will be okay on him. Right, I think we play it a little bit like we did with Vucevic too. Is that if anybody else ends up on him, we'll probably have to send some other coverages, some more bodies at him. We'll probably let Marc, try him early and see how it goes. But there's a lot of problems Marc causes for him at the other end too, because he likes to just kind of sit in the paint and try to block shots and protect the rim. And as you know, Marc plays really well on the perimeter. He can shoot the three. He becomes a facilitator on offense and moving the ball side to side, and that moves the rest of their defense. So it should be good. I mean, they're both really good centers in this league. And in a league where there's not a lot of centers, you're going to see two really good ones going at it.
Last time I checked, you guys were the top-ranked defensive team of the first round. You've been a very good defensive team throughout the year. But I've noticed, and I don't think this is shocking to anybody, generally the biggest difference between playoff basketball and regular season basketball is that defensive intensity. Is this something you always anticipated? Have you been building towards this? How did you get to this level so quickly where defensively you guys just pretty much shut down Orlando?
Yeah, I think yes is the answer to those questions. I think we were building towards it. I tried to hold a lot of things back early in the year and not get into a whole lot of coverages, just trying to get some fundamentals and foundation built. Then we got into a section of the year where we were almost playing catch up a little bit, just to make sure we could use a variety of coverages in case we needed them. But you're right. I think there was a gear that this veteran team had been holding back just a little bit. And after we got smacked in game one, from there on out, we played extremely hard. I really think a lot of it had to do with just determination and great effort. We really sprinted hard back to get our defense set up. We got in their faces. We reached at the ball. We helped and covered for guys when mistakes were made, and were just pretty relentless at that end. And that was a good sign, man. It was a good sign.
With Nick Nurse, a lot of criticism directed towards Kyle Lowry after game one, but his numbers and his play off the charts 2 through 5. I know you were very supportive of him even after game one, but the amount of charges that he takes, I mean, he's been famous for this his whole career, but he's beaten like 5, 6, 7 teams in the first round in terms of the amount of charges he's taking. Like, can you game plan for that? Do you walk into a game and you're like, I expect Kyle to take 2 or 3 tonight?
You can't really, and I don't think you can if you're on the other team either. You know, I mean, if teams are being aggressive, and they do a lot of them in this league now, they're saying, hey, let's take it, what they say, downhill towards the rim. And he's just, you know, got a really incredible knack for, A, throwing his body in front of people. You know, that can't be easy to do all the time, right? And his timing's impeccable, right? He just he's not there and he's there. You know what I mean? And he's there in a legal defensive position. And those are huge plays. After he made about, I think it was the last game 5. I think he had 2 or 3 of them almost within a fairly short amount of time. You could almost see the momentum or the magic spirit, you know, being affected by this guy just keeps making these plays, and we keep turning the ball over. So it really is something. It's really something.
A lot of people in the media, they talk about going into a series, how experience can play off or pay off for a group and only help the cause. Going forward as the playoffs progress, how do you expect Kawhi and Danny Green to kind of use that experience that they've had, or is that kind of overstated or something that we overrate in the media? How do you think they'll go about showing how they have experience and how it can be helpful?
I don't think it's overstated, and I think it comes more into play over the series, right? Maybe not any one game, but I think handling and advancing in a playoff series, you have to be able to ride those way up and down waves a little bit. You don't get too high after a win. You don't talk any smack. You just keep it professional and keep it serious. You don't get too down and point fingers. You just, again, get back to work and stick together and try to play a little harder the next time out. And I think that's what the experienced guys know more than anything is that, yeah, just because you're in the league 10 years playing against a second year guy on any given night, that doesn't mean anything. But I think, or as much, but over a series, you should be able to handle the pressures, the pitfalls, the down moments a little bit better, and even handle the up moments. It's not easy sometimes when you're playing well to handle the victory sometimes too, but you got to handle them as even keeled as you can.
So how does that explain Pascal Siakam, who doesn't have a ton of experience, yet he's playing over 37 minutes a night? His numbers are off the charts. I mean, you'd think this guy was in the league for 10 years.
Well, first of all, he's surrounded by a group of experienced guys, right? So that certainly helps him, and he's got a pretty steady demeanor himself. He just kind of goes out there and plays, and he has a few issues. He tries to figure them out, and his teammates help him figure them out. And again, I think one of the things he said midway through the year when somebody was like, you just got to be shocked at the season you're having, he goes, no, this is the way I always saw myself being, So I think he expects to have
this play and continue to play well. And let's hope he keeps it going because he's had a tremendous season and a great first playoff series.
Well, congrats on the first round. I know it's only the beginning for you guys, or that's certainly the hope. And good luck in the second round and moving forward. And I'm sure we'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Nick.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
There's Nick Nurse, head coach of the Raptors, also famous for the Nick Nurse face.
The gif.
The gif that he has supplied the world, because that's not going anywhere.
No.
Like, if there's a massive, like, if a pick in the NFL draft, some guy goes like fifth where he was slotted to go in the 20s,
yeah.
Nick Nurse
is
face.
It's not close, but is it like the crying Jordan face?
I don't think anything can ever reach crying Jordan.
Man, oh man.
But it's going to make a push. It'll be around for a long time.
Yeah.
We'll get into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Second round starting tonight. Vlade Guerrero Jr., him making his debut tomorrow night. We'll touch on that later in the afternoon again. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Part man, part machine.
The Overdrive Man of Steel.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo, I'm the man.
All right, the Man of Steel is brought to you by Steel, a quality product built to last and priced to sell. What do you guys got?
Man of Steel. Well, I want to just do the Carolina Hurricanes, but can I do that?
Yeah, you can do the whole team. Why not?
Individually, they dug in. Now, I thought Washington was in full control of that game at 3-1. And then they continued chip away, and then they find a way to get it done in double overtime. They dominated them in the first overtime.
Absolutely.
Dominated.
I'm going to go with my old roommate, Justin Williams. He just makes it happen in Game 7.
Yeah.
More points in Game 7 than any other player in NHL history.
Yeah, last night was his 15th point.
More than anybody. More than Gretzky.
Yeah. We joke about like the clutch gene. It's something. Like, there's something inside that guy where when it comes down to it, he makes it happen. It's you on the golf course? No.
Not clutch.
Mull's having the right clips ready? No. This guy has it.
Yeah.
Al having things ready for the show? No.
Clutch.
You're saying Al and Mullen don't have the clutch gene?
No.
I think they do.
They need a seminar with Justin Williams.
A sit down.
A sit down luncheon.
Where are you at?
Buffalo Bisons third baseman, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. hits a bomb yesterday in AAA. He's my man of steel. And I'm going to look ahead to tomorrow night. I'm calling my shot because we came up with the scoop that he was playing tomorrow night.
Yes, we broke it.
It's embarrassing what's happening in this profession where we're not getting credit for him getting called up for tomorrow night. We've been saying it all week. We called our shot. It's an embarrassment to journalism that this show is not getting credit.
You did. You broke the scoop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It should say.
What kind of society are we living in here?
As Brian Hayes said on Overdrive.
Right. Sources told me.
Lock it in for Friday.
And I'm going to look ahead to tomorrow night.
And he's got a dinger?
Jr.
One dinger?
I think he steps
minimum
up.
One dinger.
I think he performs tomorrow night.
All right.
I think this guy is going to be in beast mode, and I can't wait for it.
He's going to do some work, too. He'll be the most recognizable guy in Toronto.
Yeah, he's one of the most recognizable guys in Toronto. It's incredible.
He's got the hair, the flow.
Yep.
He'll be crushing it on and off of the field.
We'll continue to touch on Vladdy in the next hour, and we're going to rank 1 through 8 left in the Stanley Cup playoffs, our confidence level for a cup win. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.